Every time the Blackhawks win this season, you could win big with Circa Sports Illinois. One fan scores a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino, and 100 more win a $100 Circa app credit. Don't miss your shot. See the Blackhawks contest page.
Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Meliotis here in our downtown Chicago studio. And not as always, Jack Heinrich is usually riding shotgun with me, but for the first time, I think, since doing Blackhawks Live, unfortunately, Jack is ill and he's been down for the count, so I got Eli Burke joining me. What's up, Eli?
Hey, it's good to be here.
Good to be here. You've been pulling off a long day today. Earlier today, you were at Big Ten Network, and now you've been producing three. This is producing show two of three tonight?
Yeah, correct. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
All right, look at that. Eli stepping in for Jack, and I'm not going to bug Eli tonight because he has a lot of other things to take care of, but I did want him to jump on and introduce himself. He does some great work here at WGN Radio. So I went to practice earlier today. Let's get to some Blackhawks news. And Hawks had a scheduled practice at 11:30, and I walk in at 11 o'clock, and I see the Hawks have two rinks at Fifth Third Arena. It's the main rink where the Blackhawks typically practice on, and then there's a second rink if they want to have an extended practice. And when I was walking up to the media room, I look at the main rink, and there are like two fans sitting in the stands waiting for the Blackhawks to trickle out there. But then I look at the second rink before I was putting down my my backpack and all my things, and I saw there was a flock of fans that were watching the rink. And I'm like, well, this either means Frank Nazar has hit the ice or Connor Bedard has hit the ice. It's one of the two, because there were a lot of fans that were searching or watching whoever was skating on the ice. And sure enough, good old number 98 was back on the ice for the Blackhawks. We haven't seen him since December 12th when he left with a shoulder injury in the final second of the game against the St. Louis Blues, which was really a freak accident. He was trying to go for a shot right off the faceoff. I think there was like 0.7 or 0.8 seconds left. And Braden Schenn, in that moment, he's instructed to do anything to prevent Connor Bedard from shooting the puck. And it was just a weird play. Unfortunate. We haven't seen Connor Bedard in several weeks, but I thought it was a really encouraging sign that we saw Connor Bedard on the ice. Now, I was able to watch Connor closely, and at no point did Connor Bedard ever shoot a puck. Now, he maybe guided one in, or he maybe flicked it in with his left wrist, but he did not use that right shoulder. And so we talked to Blackhawks head coach Jeff Blashill after practice, and he said that was a team order not to shoot any pucks if you're Connor Bedard, because he has not graduated to that part in his recovery process. But I really thought it was an encouraging sign to see number 98 out there, if the nothing else, to provide some optimism for a Blackhawks team that has really struggled since he has gone out of the lineup. And maybe even before that, the Hawks were maybe trending in a way where they were trying to get the wheels back on the train tracks. But it was great to see Connor Bedard out there. There is no timeline for his return. He is going to be evaluated after the new year, which is what Blackhawks head coach Jeff Blashill said in the original update. But I thought it was interesting that Connor was out there just a couple days before his official evaluation of after the new year. Connor is kind of itching to get back. And with this injury report, we do want to introduce a new sponsor here on Blackhawks Live and on WGN Radio. The injury report is sponsored by Illinois Bone and Joint Institute. Injured after hours, they've got you covered with access to their clinical team beyond regular clinical hours. Learn more at IBJI.com. We are happy to have you aboard. And what better way to kick off our new sponsor with that Connor Bedard injury update? Let's get to some other injury updates as well, though. We did ask Blackhawks head coach Jeff Blashill about Frank Nazar, who has been out of the lineup since December 20th with what we believe to be a fractured jaw. He's been out for 9 days now. And Blashill said that Nazar has officially started chewing some solid foods. So we know that he's probably been on a liquid diet since taking a slap shot to the face. We saw that last month in mid-November. We saw Boston Bruins defenseman Charlie McAvoy take a slap shot to the jaw in almost the same exact place as Frank Nazar. And he missed just under a month of play. And he has since returned to to play for the Boston Bruins. However, he is wearing a full bubble shield, which we expect Frank Nazar to be doing once he returns, similar to what Connor Bedard did when he was when he fractured his jaw as a rookie. So Nazar graduated to eating solid foods. I think the one thing about him is it's going to be hard for him to try to keep on some muscle. Like, he's probably going to lose a lot of weight. Maybe not muscle, I should say, just weight in general. And so as he does progress to eating solid foods and trying to get his calorie intake back up, Frank Nazar, that's something that he's going to have to work through. So those are the two updates: Connor Bedard, Frank Nazar. And then on the positive front, as far as guys actually returning, Nick Foligno returned to the lineup yesterday for the Blackhawks after missing 19 games with a left hand slashed wrist injury. I can't figure out exactly what it was. I do know that he had a big brace on his left wrist. And so great to see him back in the lineup. He was out since November 15th. And the Hawks had a kind of a weird weekend because they came out of the holiday break, the 3-day Christmas break, where it's league mandated. No team is supposed to be on the ice for either of the 3 days, which calls for an interesting situation on December 27th for a lot of the teams that are traveling to their destinations to play a road game. Now, the Blackhawks were in Dallas on Saturday night, so there were a couple options that the Blackhawks could have done. They could have skated early in Chicago, then traveled to Dallas just to get a morning skate in, or they could have woken up really early, traveled to Dallas, then have kind of a late morning, early afternoon morning skate just to kind of dust off the cobwebs. But Jeff Blashill, he decided to go with option C, which I didn't think was going to be an option for the Blackhawks, and he decided, we're not going to skate at all. And Jeff Blashill said he tried the previous two in his previous destinations in Detroit, and I don't know if maybe Tampa did it when during his 3 years as an assistant, but he said, we're not going to skate. And so I thought that could go a couple different ways for, well, two different ways for the Blackhawks. Either they don't have their legs. It's against the number two ranked team in the entire NHL and the Dallas Stars. Like, all the cards are stacked against the Blackhawks to lose that game on Saturday. They ended up starting Arvid Soderblom in net. So the Hawks went with their backup goaltender. And Arvid, mind you, in his previous five starts, he had a 5.87 goals against average, 8.35 save percentage. So, I mean, he was really struggling in his first six starts of the season. He was 3-2-1, 2.52 goals against average, and a 9.12 save percentage. So a really night and day difference. So the Hawks elect to start their backup goaltender. Dallas goes with Jake Oettinger, who is a top three goaltender in the world, might even be the starter for Team USA at the Olympics, even though I think it's going to be Connor Hellebuyck. It is just a 1A, 1B type situation. And Dallas is at home. They have a morning skate. They're the second best team in the NHL. They have like two regulation losses in their last like 30 games, which is absolutely unheard of. They got the number one ranked power play. Like, all the ingredients for the Blackhawks to get get routed, that does not happen. The Blackhawks pick up a 4-3 shootout victory over the Dallas Stars. It was 1-1 through one period, 2-2 through two periods, and then 3-3 through three periods. Kind of resembled that Bears 49ers game last night. And Hawks went 5 minutes without scoring an overtime goal or preventing Dallas from doing so. And then it was Nick Lardis scoring the shootout winner. I just thought it was an unbelievable performance by the Blackhawks without Connor Bedard, without Frank Nazar, and kind of like a late scratch situation, or maybe I guess the team was preparing for it. There was no Ilya Mikheyev in the game after he and his wife welcomed a new baby. So congratulations to the Mikheyev family. But Hawks were without three key pieces, backup goaltender, and they find a way to pick up a 4-3 shootout victory over the Dallas Stars. Unfortunately, though, the Hawks were not able to carry that over into the Pittsburgh game last night, and it was a 7-3 drubbing to the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Hawks are now 0-4-0 in the second of a back-to-back, and they've been outscored 27-7 in those games, so a minus 20 goal differential. Arvid Soderblom had started the previous three second of a back-to-backs, and I think we've said it on this show before, but I think the Hawks would be wise to start Spencer Knight in the second of a back-to-back moving forward, just to kind of change things up, and knowing that in the second game, you're probably not going to have the team in front of the goaltender is not going to have their legs. And so it probably makes more sense to get Spencer Knight, who is the better goaltender of the two, the number one guy for Chicago, to you know, throw him out there. And unfortunately for him, that was a rare off night against Pittsburgh. I thought in two of the four goals, he easily could have stopped, and he would probably be the first one to tell you that he should have stopped them. And so unfortunately, the Blackhawks aren't able to capitalize on the Dallas victory, but the Hawks pick up two out of a possible 4 points. I just didn't think the way they would get them is how they got them. The win in Dallas, the loss in Pittsburgh. I thought it would be reversed. Hawks get the regulation loss in Dallas. They pick up a win in Pittsburgh. But anyway, it was still encouraging victory for the Blackhawks against the Dallas Stars. And let's see if they can respond tomorrow against the New York Islanders. And speaking of tomorrow, looks like the Hawks are going to roll out some new line combinations. And when I was watching the Blackhawks started practice at 11:30, and they immediately went into the line rushes. And I started seeing some of the trios forming, and I got a little excited because I think these are going to be some of this is probably the best line combinations that I think the Blackhawks can put together with Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar out. I haven't been crazy about some of the lines over the last several games, but I think when I watch practice today, these are probably the most ideal lines that I would go with. And so this is how the Blackhawks rolled them out today. It was Bertuzzi, Ryan Green, and Andre Burakovsky on the first line. Teuvo Teravainen, Oliver Moore at the center position, and Nick Lardis on the second line. Ryan Donato, Jason Dickinson, and Ilya Mikheyev back to being the third line, which is the checking line, the lines that draw the most difficult matchups for the Blackhawks, for the opposition. You saw Jason Dickinson go up against Sidney Crosby all night on Sunday. And then the fourth line, Nick Foligno, Colton Dock, and Landon Slager, which leaves the extras as Sam Lafferty. The Hawks ended up reassigning Dominic Toninato to the AHL's Rockford IceHogs after practice today, so he's no longer part of the fold. And the D pairings ended up staying the same. So let me just focus on the lines really quick. Bertuzzi, Green, and Burakovsky. I think the Bertuzzi and Burakovsky combo, I really like them together. I think Burakovsky has some swagger. He's a transporter of the puck. He can enter he's really good at zone entries. And so I think that's going to be a line that is going to need that. You have Ryan Green that goes, Ryan Green can honestly do it all. He can win faceoffs. He can go to the dirty areas. He's got skill. He's got a high hockey IQ. Tyler Bertuzzi does the same thing as far as he has a very, very high hockey IQ, goes to the dirty areas, net front guy. And so I just think that line is going to work well together. But the line I'm most excited about is Teravainen, Moore, and Lardis. Now, when Nick Lardis got called up by the Blackhawks in the Detroit game about a week and a half ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago at this point, he got put on a line with Oliver Moore and Ryan Green, and it was a very young line. Now, Nick Lardis, actually, I think that his best game as a Blackhawks was probably his first game against Detroit. But I just thought over time that was probably going to be a line that maybe struggled, not just because of the inexperience, but well, actually a big part of because of the inexperience. Like, I think you have three guys there that are trying to work through their NHL journey. I mean, Ryan Green has just been terrific. Like, he does not look out of place whatsoever, but Moore has been through some ups and downs. And so you have Moore and Lardis together, which I think is a good combination to have as a duo, because they have that built-in chemistry from their time together with the Rockford IceHogs. But I just wasn't crazy about having three kids on the same line. And then in two of the other games for Lardis, he was on the fourth line. I can't remember what that fourth line was. I think it was in the the Ottawa game. I can't remember who it was. I know Sam Lafferty was on it, but there was one other guy. And then it was the Toninato, Lafferty, Lardis line in Dallas that I thought was really good. But it's just not a line that you want Lardis playing on, the fourth line. You want him in an offensive role, top six, getting power play time. But the big part for me is putting him on a line with Teuvo Teravainen. And Teravainen is a very good playmaker. He's pass-first mentality, extremely defensively responsible. He's one of the most important penalty killers on the Blackhawks. But even when Teravainen was on the Blackhawks in the 2015 season, when the Hawks won their third of six Stanley Cups in the dynasty era, Teravainen was in a third line checking role during the playoffs. So he's very responsible defensively, knows where to be, and then he's got those offensive instincts as well to help set up players like Nick Lardis. So you have Teravainen, who's veteran, pass first, defensive, and then you have Nick Lardis, who maybe shoots the puck better than anyone on this Blackhawks team outside of Connor Bedard, now on the right wing. And so you have Teravainen, who's typically on the right side. Like, he does play right wing, but he can also play left. So it could be a little bit of a transition for Teravainen, but he has been around long enough to know that, to know how to play all three of the forward positions, because he also does take some draws, which I expect him to do on occasion too, if Oliver Moore is having a hard time at the dot. And so I just really like, I've been kind of beating on that drum of pairing Teravainen and Lardis together. Now, I will eat my words if this does not work. Like, I do think Teravainen and Lardis is going to, they're going to really complement each other well. And if it doesn't work, hey, like, I guess it's okay. I just think it would have been sillier not to try it. And so then you add Oliver Moore to the line. And I know Moore has been playing a majority of the wing this season. He does have history of playing center. He did it in college. He did it at the USA national program. And so I do think there is going to be a little bit of an adjustment for Moore, but it's not unfamiliar territory for him. And the reason why I don't mind him playing center is not necessarily because of his play at the faceoff circle, but he is such a fast player. Like, one of the fastest players, not just on the Blackhawks, but in the entire NHL. When he gets going, man, he can absolutely fly. And the reason why he can fly is when he can skate from behind his own net and pick up speed going through the neutral zone, that's when he's really dangerous, because then he can back off defenders, maybe catch some defenders by surprise with his speed and help the Blackhawks enter the offensive zone, where Teravainen and Lardis can then do their thing, and then Moore is just kind of a little jelly bean. He just, like, skates all over the ice. And so I'm really excited to see what that line could do. Hopefully they are together. I think the last practice the Blackhawks had, they went through the line combinations, and then the next day, the next game, they aborted those lines. Like, they didn't even go with them. So hopefully the lines that they rolled in at practice today are the lines they're going to go with tomorrow, because I really do think that the current top six, as currently constructed with Bertuzzi, Green, Burakovsky, Teravainen, and Moore, Lardis, I think that could work really well. And then you factor in the Donato, Dickinson, Mikheyev line. If you look at some of the underlying numbers, that trio has been really good together, and they draw a lot of the defensive responsibilities. Whereas when Bedard and Nazar got injured, Dickinson and Mikheyev were asked to play in a top six role, and it was kind of like, hey, we need to abort the defensive matchups, and we need both of them to step up a little bit more offensively, is maybe how the Blackhawks were thinking. But now they're back into their normal third line role, where they can focus more on just checking the opposition's top lines, and the Hawks' top six can be the ones that are driving the offense. All right, we got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. We're going to do our bi-weekly check-in with Mike Palm from Circa. That's coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Before we bring in Mike Palm from Circa, when the Blackhawks win, you can win. Circa Sports is giving away one grand prize stay and other prizes every time the Blackhawks win. Every time the Blackhawks win this season, some will win a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, plus $500 of stadium credit and a Blackhawks Centennial jersey. Additionally, 100 people will get a $100 credit on their Circa app account. Enter once and you'll be eligible to win on all future game days when the Blackhawks win, home and away. See the Blackhawks contest page for details. Now let's bring in our guy, Mike Palm, who is over in Vegas. How is Christmas in Vegas, first off, Mike? What's the weather like down there?
Wasn't in Las Vegas for Christmas, Charlie. I was in Southern California.
Oh.
And both places were very rainy. In fact, we were at Disneyland on Christmas Eve and got rained out, basically. No parade, no fireworks. It was also raining in Las Vegas on Christmas Eve. A little bit better on Christmas Day, intermittent showers, and then by Friday it had cleared up. But what could you do? But like today, You know, our high is 60, and we'll get down into the low 40s in the evening.
Okay. I'll those problems don't sound too bad.
No, they're not awful.
I love it. All right, let's get to some hockey talk. Unfortunately for the Blackhawks, things are spiraling just a little bit, and I think we kind of expected that without Connor Bedard, without Frank Nazar. It was something I was talking about the other day is, like, you take away two of the best players in the of their teams on you know, other NHL teams. Like, if you take away, like Jack Hughes from New Jersey, if you take away Connor McDavid from Edmonton, if you take away Austin Matthews from Toronto, like, they're going to feel the presence. And then you take away the second best player on the Blackhawks, which is Frank Nazar. And it's just hard for the Hawks to kind of stay afloat. I don't feel like any of us should be surprised, even though, you know, the conversation has been hard here in Chicago, but no surprise that the Hawks find themselves back near the bottom after dealing with such significant injuries over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, it was to be expected, but, you know, the shame of it is that I thought they could stay in the playoff hunt just a little bit longer,
right?
And then see what would happen. The West is tough. It's not like you're in the East where, you know, 16 teams are separated by what, you know, less than 10 points or 11 points right now. So it's a little tougher in that respect. But at the same time, if the playoffs started today, the Pacific is weak, and you're looking at, you know, you're looking at 44 points ish would be in the wild. It would be in the playoffs in the West as the record in the Pacific Division. But you're going to get too far behind the eight ball where you're not going to have enough room for error come post. Post Olympics here, so they still have a ways to go. You still want to see how Spencer Knight responds over the course of a full season. I know he had a tough game yesterday, but you know, when you look coming off the Christmas break, all those games on Saturday, there were really only two teams that had to travel very far, and one was the Blackhawks that had to go to Dallas, and Detroit had to go to Carolina. If you look everywhere else, everybody was an hour flight or less. So they
right.
sort of had a really bad scheduling spot there. So I excuse it a little bit. And hitting a big 2 points on the road in Dallas. So I'm willing to forgive the effort against the Penguins.
Let's talk about some of the teams in the Western Conference. We know Colorado is in a class seemingly above their own. Even the Dallas Stars feels like they're not far behind the Colorado Avalanche. I know just 6 points behind Colorado has two games in hand. But the one team that's starting to catch my eye again, because they always start to come alive a couple months into the season, it takes them a while to get going, are the Edmonton Oilers. And Connor McDavid has just been unbelievable. I think he has like 31 points in his last 11 games. I mean, averaging almost 3 points a game. Leon Draisaitl had a hat trick against Calgary in the Battle of Alberta. I mean, what is it about Edmonton where they seemingly always get off to a really slow start and then they flip a switch and it's like, oh yeah, that's the team that went to the Stanley Cup final a couple years in a row.
Yeah, well, they win as McDavid is gone, right? I mean, he was off to a slow start.
Yeah.
A very average start for him. And when he flipped the switch, it was coincides with them getting back in. And look, the Pacific is very winnable. I mean, you're talking about Anaheim, who's probably a year or two away from being elite in the West. You're talking about a VGK team that really looked lost without Jack Eichel. Played their best game without Eichel by far against Colorado Saturday night and blew two-goal leads and a lead in the final 2 minutes against this Avalanche team that you just can't beat in regulation. So, I mean, it's out there for the taking, the West. So, L.A., the Kemper injury, I mean, they don't score enough. San Jose's an exciting young team. I don't know that they have the goaltending to compete. Seattle can't score. Who do you fear in the Pacific? I mean, Edmonton should win this division. I don't have high hopes for VGK. Now, if Hart can regain form and you know, they can, I think they can be the one or the two seed in the Pacific, but I don't know that they're beating anybody in the Central of the top three, Colorado, Dallas, or Minnesota. So I think only Edmonton at full strength can compete against the champ of the Central when the playoffs get to the West Final.
Yeah, it feels like Vegas is a team that's going to scare teams if they go into the playoffs 100% healthy, because it just feels like every year. I mean, sometimes I look at the roster, and I think last year going into the playoffs, Vegas didn't have a single player that was like under 6 foot one. Like, they fielded like a football team last year, and it just, I mean, maybe the physicality that Vegas provides, and maybe just the aura of the Vegas Golden Knights and how unbeatable that they seemingly are in that building, feels like eventually they will come around. But yeah, they've dealt with some injuries, particularly Petrangelo. I know that's obviously a huge loss. Aiden Hill, we talked about. And so if Carter Hart does kind of fill that gap, Jack Eichel gets healthy, Mitch Marner starts playing like Mitch Marner. I know he's had kind of some ups and downs. It's going to be interesting, but I agree with you. There's like outside of Colorado and Dallas, and maybe if you want to lump in Minnesota there with after the Quinn Hughes trade, there's not really anyone in the West that scares me, but especially in the Pacific, like that seems like such a winnable division.
You know, I thought that Marner would get off to a much better start getting out of that cauldron.
I agree.
That is Toronto, where he can't go anywhere without everybody in Toronto analyzing his every move. If Mitch Marner walked into the Circus Sportsbook right now, I don't know that anybody would even know who he was, right?
Right.
So he doesn't have any pressure here, but he's been very average. He's been very, very average. And at the same time, the Leafs have felt the loss of their quarterback. You know, that it's amazing to me how bad their power play is, but they don't have their quarterback on the power play. So I don't think that the Knights play nearly as well defensively as they have in the past few years. So, you know, Carter Hart or Aiden Hill or whoever it's going to be is going to have to make up for a lot of that. I just don't think they play defensively as a unit the way they had in, let's say, the past 3 to 5 years. So I don't consider them to be a serious threat.
Looking to the Eastern Conference, now I know there's a two-way tie right now at the top in Detroit and Carolina, but Detroit has three more games played on Carolina. So from a points percentage, there are still a couple teams like Tampa and Carolina are above Detroit. But right now, I don't think I would have predicted that the Red Wings would be sitting near the top of the Eastern Conference going into the calendar year of 2026. What do you make of the Red Wings? It feels like every year we're talking about, is this going to be the year they take the next step? Like, I look at them and I'm like, they don't feel threatening to me, but they're just still hovering around things. Like, how do you view the Red Wings and their outlook moving forward?
Well, they choked it off last year in March, right? What did they lose, 8 or 9 in a row, and got themselves out of the playoffs, and Montreal backed their way into it.
Yep.
The East is so tightly compacted. I have this ticket, Colorado over New Jersey in the final. So Colorado looks unbeatable, and I mean, 3-1 might still even be good odds. This ticket is 60-1. Now, I have some room to play around with finding somebody else to come out of the East. The problem is everybody's sort of the same team. I think Tampa's played much better. It took Tampa a couple weeks. You know, they treated the first 2 weeks of the season like their preseason. I think they played very, very well. I think Tampa is still going to be the team to beat with the injuries to the Panthers. Tampa's the team to beat coming out of the Atlantic. And then, you know, Carolina, every single year we talk about how good they are in the regular season, but they're just a regular season team. So who comes out of the Metro? I like the Capitals a little bit because I think they have a good goaltending tandem between Thompson and Lindgren. I like Lindgren a lot as a second goalie. So I think the Capitals will be live. The Islanders have played better in the last 8 weeks after Patrick Waugh sort of got into them. I kind of feel the same way about Detroit as I do about Philadelphia. I have to see it to believe it. So, you know, when you're trying to find alternatives in New Jersey for me for futures in the East, I'll probably at some point look to Tampa Bay here and then pick a team out of the Metro as well, probably the Capitals.
I'm right there with you with Tampa Bay, and it's weird because they did get off to that slow start, and then they just started losing guys to injury, like Victor Hedman and Braden Point, and Vasilevsky was out for a little bit of time. And there were guys on their blue line that I genuinely have not heard before. And it was like 3 or 4 of them. I was like, who is this guy? I've never heard of him. And they just started to get red hot when some of their big guns were out. And so I don't know if it's just the culture that they have there that it's like, all right, next man up mentality. But I'm right there with you. Like after the Florida Panthers kind of have made back-to-back Stanley Cup runs and Tampa was playing deep into the playoffs for three straight years, it feels like that core group specifically maybe just needed a mental reset where they had some longer summers to just mentally get their bodies and mentally get back in the right space. And now it feels like they've caught like a second wind with this core. And I would not be surprised at all if Tampa is the team that comes out of the East based on how they're playing and just based on the moxie that group has too.
I agree with you, but they've gotten three short summers in a row now after going through all the, almost for a decade, or three long summers after going through short summers for seeming like a decade. How much will this catch up with Edmonton with all the finals appearances? That's something that we'll look at as we go forward in the year, too. At some point, these teams on these dynastic runs or finals runs run out of gas at some point, right? It was the Buffalo Bills in the fourth straight Super Bowl loss in the second half that had nothing left. And so you have to try to identify these things as the season wears on, although sometimes they don't show up until the later rounds of the playoffs.
Last one for you. The Florida Panthers are starting to look like the Florida Panthers again. And obviously there's no Barkov, but Matthew Tkachuk should be returning to the lineup in the next couple weeks at some point. Boy, if we're on a collision course for a Tampa-Florida Eastern Conference final, sign me up. I would love to see that seven-game series between those rivals.
I tell you what I do almost instinctively is after they play each other, I bet against them in the next game. They just take so much out of each other. They're wars, and you look at the penalty minutes in these games, they're record-setting type paces, and I just think they put everything into this hatred. The teams hate each other. They play each other in the first round every year, it seems like. But the teams hate each other as much as the head coaches do. The most underreported story in all of hockey, Paul Maurice and John Cooper, and how much they dislike each other.
I love it. Mike, thanks so much for doing this. Hope you have a happy new year, and we'll talk in a couple weeks.
Happy new year to you and the listeners, Charlie. Thanks.
I love it. That is Mike Palm from Circa. Love talking some NHL storylines and betting trends with him. We got one more break, and then we're going to wrap up Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here putting a bow on this show, and we got to do it by highlighting the three Blackhawks prospects that are participating in the 2026 World Junior Championships, and all three of them are really thriving right now. It's Anton Frundell for Team Sweden, Vaclav Nestrosil for Czechia, and AJ Spellacy for Team USA. Let's start with Blackhawks number three overall pick, Anton Frundell. Boy, what a tournament he's having so far. So in Team Sweden, they've played three games so far. They opened the tournament last Friday. It was a 3-2 victory over Slovakia. And Frundell had a goal, an assist, 9 shots on goal. That's just shots on goal. I don't know what the shot attempts were. I don't even know if they're registering that. But he also hit 2 crossbars, I believe, in the game. So his shot attempts were north of 11, or at least 11. And then he finished with 18.08 of ice time. He's playing on the first line, playing on the first power play. He's an alternate captain. In that game, he was actually named the player of the game, so what a start for him. Then he follows that up in game two, a 4-2 victory over Switzerland for Team Sweden. Frundell had 1 assist, didn't have a shot on goal, but he logged almost 20 minutes of ice time with 19.01. And then the third game was earlier today, an 8-1 victory for Team Sweden over Germany, and Frundell had 2 goals, 9 shots on goal yet again, and 17.05 of ice time. Now, all three goals that Frundell has scored for Sweden in this tournament have come on the power play, and all three of them have been absolute blasts on the one-timer. And it's hard not to get excited about the thought of him playing on the power play with Connor Bedard whenever he does make it to the Blackhawks and is a full-time NHL player. Although I will say, I don't know how that's going to work because Connor Bedard is really good on the right faceoff circle. Frondell is really solid on the right faceoff circle because that's his one-timer side, but that's an embarrassment of riches for the Blackhawks. It's a great problem to have, but, boy. And then, so through three games now, Frondell has 5 points, tied for second among all skaters that are participating in this tournament. So what a tournament that Frondell has gotten off to. And then Vaclav Nestrosil, the number 25 overall pick in June in the same draft class as Anton Frondell, he's also played in 3 games for Team Czechia. The first one was a 7-5 loss to Canada. Nestrosil had 2 assists, 1 shot on goal, a +2 rating and 16:09 of ice time. This was on Friday. Game 2 follows that up. A big 7-2 win for Czechia over Denmark. He had 1 goal, 1 assist, 2 shots on goal, +1 rating, 20 minutes and 15 seconds of ice time. And boy, you got to go look at that goal because it was a no-looker. Wasn't even looking at the net. He just kind of fired it on there. He even tried pulling it off in the game earlier today. And then game 3, which was today, it was a 2-1 overtime win for Czechia over Finland. Didn't have any points, but he did have 2 shots on goal and finished with 16:47 of ice time. So Nestrosil has been awesome. He's playing on the first line wing as well. And then last but not least is AJ Spellacy, who was a third round pick by the Blackhawks in 2024. He's representing Team USA. And in game 1, 6-3 victory for Team USA over Germany. He had 2 assists, 2 shots on goal, a +3 rating, and 12:50 of ice time. So he started more in a bottom six role, then got promoted to the second line in game 2 that resulted in a 2-1 victory for USA over Switzerland. Didn't have any points, didn't have any shots on goal, but he had 14:34 of ice time. But then in the game today, which I believe has just gone final, let's see. I think it was a 6-5 final for Team USA over Slovakia. Yes, that game has officially gone final. And AJ Spellacy was an absolute menace in the game, especially early on in the game. He finished with a goal, which was a shorthanded goal, 1 assist, 2 shots on goal, and a +2 rating. They don't have the updated ice times yet for that one, but AJ Spellacy, man, I think of all the Blackhawks prospects that are in the system, I might be intrigued by him the most because every time I watch him, I think Tom Wilson vibes, like a guy that's going to be really hard to play against, but he has some offensive skill set to his game too, where he's not just going to go out there and just be hitting people and be a fourth line guy. Like he can play anywhere in your lineup. He can play center. He can play wing. He could play on your power play in net front. He could play on your penalty kill as we've seen him play on Team USA. He has a football background. We know he's been, I think it was a free safety, also maybe a linebacker, I think he was, and he hits like a linebacker, man. I mean, the first shift of the game for Team USA on Friday's game, I think it was Friday, I mean, he just absolutely bulldozed over someone behind the net. And so I'm curious, his game, the way he plays, is better suited for pro hockey and playing against, maybe not playing against, but it's better for playing in tournaments like this where the games are so meaningful and it's kind of like a playoff type vibe where it's like every game there's weight to every game. Whereas in the regular season, it's really hard to play the way AJ Spellacy does for 82 games, like hypothetically in an NHL season. But he's the kind of guy that you want to go into your foxhole with when the playoffs roll around or in a tournament like this. And he's 6'3", 205 pounds. I mean, I don't even know if he's 205. Like, I think he might be closer to 220. I mean, he's just an absolute wrecking ball out there. And so all three of these prospects, Frondell, Nestrosil, AJ Spellacy, I mean, it's hard to ask for much more in the first three games that they've played. And they're all so young, too. Like, this is a tournament that I enjoy watching because Frondell is over in the Swedish Hockey League. He's playing against professionals over there, right? AJ Spellacy, he's playing in juniors, different ages. Vaclav Nestrosil, he's playing against college players that are maybe 3, 4, 5 years older than him, depending on the age. But in this tournament, the World Juniors, all three of them are going up against their peers at the same age, and it's the best players at that age. And so it's just a good, litmus test, a good measuring stick on where your game is at relative to your peers. And if you've been watching the World Juniors and you see Frondell and you see Nestrasil and you see AJ Spellacy, it's an encouraging sign that those guys are shining because it is against the best players at their age group. And so, I think of the Blackhawks pipeline, and they've just been loaded with prospects, and they just keep coming and coming. And very rarely have we highlighted a Blackhawks prospect where they haven't been progressing in some way. Like, it feels like every player that they've picked, you hear something really positive about them. So, great to see Frondell, Nestrasil, and Spellacy performing. They're pretty much just about wrapping up the group play, and then we're going to get into the meaningful game. So stay tuned for that. That's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Our next show is going to be Monday, January 5th at 7 p.m. Happy New Year, everybody. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.